Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure and welcome to today's program, Kevin Burdett, who is Chief Commercial Officer at Princeton TMX. And today we're going to talk about why shippers are insourcing transportation management. So for years, outsourcing was kind of the default strategy for transportation management. In fact, I used to write how, outsourcing was always viewed as a one-way street, right? Once you outsource, particularly transportation, you very rarely, if ever, brought it back. But the tide is definitely turning. So in this episode, we explore why many companies are taking control of the transportation operations by bringing them back in-house. So what's driving this shift? How are technology, talent, and AI enabling smarter, faster, and more resilient logistics? And what should leaders consider before making the insourcing leap? So those are some of the questions we're going to address in today's episode. And it's great to have Kevin on the program to share his insights and advice on this topic. So Kevin, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Adrian. I really look forward to the topic and our discussion today. It's kind of interesting, for those folks who know me, I've been selling outsourced technology and TMS solutions for well over 20 years. But I do see a shift in the industry. I see a shift, based on different things, with the technology and people. And so I look forward to our conversation and be able to address some of these areas.
Yeah, likewise. I mean, like I said, just now, I mean, I remember again, I mean, you outsourced, you rarely brought it back because, you had, you lost your people, you didn't have the technology and so forth. And you focused your operation, your resources on other things. But really, I think it's been over the past, I would say 5, 6, 7 years where sometimes I would even go to conferences and I would see companies that said, "Hey, we used to outsource, but we decided to invest internally and implement the TMS and so forth." And I was starting to think, okay, maybe this is not so much a one-way street. But maybe to begin, let's go back to going back on your experience, kind of selling outsourcing, right? Like I said, many companies used to outsource their transportation management operations. I mean, what were the main driving forces for that, for outsourcing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And if you looked at it around 20 years ago, the big business drivers really were centered around cost control, and incremental process improvements, and really traditional growth strategies. And from that, there were several areas in which outsourcing made a lot of sense. One was in the cost reduction. It was looking to go ahead and lower their logistics and operational cost, leveraging economies of scale and expertise that you would find in these 3PLs. In addition to that, you had the technology. It allowed companies to go ahead and benefit from best practices by using, at that point in time, which was up-to-date technology. And lastly, companies looked at it at the supply chain and at transportation management. That really wasn't their core focus and their core competency. And so at that point, it made more sense for them to go ahead and outsource, that competency. But as we'll discuss later on, things have really changed over the last 20 years, and you'll see that a lot of those core competencies are actually available to companies today.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, so as I've been, in the industry now for 26, plus years. And I remember in my early days as an industry analyst, whenever I talked to transportation and logistics executives, particularly those that were trying to invest in a TMS, let's say internally, they said, it's impossible. I mean, our company views transportation as just like a cost center, something that's not strategic. So for us to kind of get any budget for technology or additional resources, it's just very difficult, if not impossible. And then ultimately, that was another contributing factor. So companies ultimately said, we're going to focus in other areas. So let's talk about what's, the tide is turning, right? So, companies are either bringing their outsource operations back in-house, or they're saying, "Hey, you know what? We need to invest internally and start growing our operations, right? Maybe modernize the systems we have in place, maybe grow our team and so forth." So from your perspective, I mean, in the customers you work with, what are you hearing? I mean, what are some of the driving forces to this shift?
Yeah, there are several areas that really are driving the change, and to look at the insourcing model versus outsourcing. And I think it really begins with, companies are looking for greater control and visibility of their network. And so, through that, it allows them to go ahead and monitor, the logistics processes more closely, ensuring that they're in compliance. The second area really is around, the speed and agility and resilience. Companies are looking to reduce, their lead times, optimizing their routes and things of that nature. And so the agility enables, faster decision making and execution, which is critical in today's environment. I would also say that if you look at it, it's interesting, we talked about people a little bit earlier, and the core competency. 20 years ago, there really weren't any supply chain programs. Most of the people who came into supply chain, they came from maybe an industrial engineering background or some type of analytical background. Whereas today, there are just a plethora of colleges that are offering a supply chain degree. As a matter of fact, I was looking up and I saw some statistics. From 2012 to 2020, the supply chain management degree grew 75%, and it outpaced all other programs that are being offered at the universities. And so I just think that you're going to find that there's more opportunity to hire really skilled people out of college, who have been studying it now for 4 years, or maybe even had a master's degree. And lastly, I know we're going to talk about technology as well, but as you're aware, artificial intelligence and predictive analytics and such has really been driving a lot of this change as well to be able to bring it in-house. And I just think that, the advancement of technology is also a big factor as well.
Yeah, that's a great point about the people aspect. I mean, I often say that to your point, a lot of the folks in this industry that are like your age and I'm my age and been around for a long time, they kind of fell into this industry, right? So I'm an engineer by background. So I meet a lot of folks that are in supply chain logistics roles that are either engineers or they started in manufacturing, they might be operations research folks, right? But none of them really studied supply chain management and logistics in college just because those degrees weren't available. And there was low visibility to this career path back when we were in college. And to your point, fast forward to today, and there's a lot of great programs out there. And it's an area that a lot of folks entering college are seeing as a great opportunity for a career moving forward. So to your point, I think the pool of folks that at least have an academic background in here that can, come in and start, applying their learnings. That learning curve is so much faster now because of that. I think the other aspect of it, and, we used to talk about the Amazon effect, and I think that's another factor here because I think, we talked earlier how cost was kind of a main driver, right? Cost reduction, logistics was used as a cost center, not really strategic. And I think what Amazon did, obviously in the parcel world, but I think this exploded into the full freight world as well, is that logistics transportation became a strategic competitive differentiator, right? If you could provide that visibility, if you can provide that predictability and reliability around shipments. So we started to expect in the business realm what we started to expect in the consumer world. So I think that was another aspect as well, is that companies started saying, hey, you know what? It's not just about, obviously, cost is always going to be important in managing costs and keeping it as low as possible. But it's to say, hey, we can actually use transportation as a competitive differentiator and a way to perhaps capture market share for our competitors that can't meet the same levels of service that perhaps we can, by investing in this area. So I think that's where a lot of companies are saying, you know what? In order for us to do that the most effectively as possible, we need to have, again, control, more direct control over this operation. So I know for a lot of the companies that I talked to, that was another element as well. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and I do see that as well. The decision making and the cultures of organizations, they want to make sure that they're aligned, with their people. And there's sometimes, When you look at the outsource, you're actually just inserting, another party, in between that decision making. And and so a lot of folks are they're looking to be able to use that as a competitive advantage, and they don't want to be able to share that, some of their inside secrets, let's say, with others as well. They want to go ahead and keep it in-house. And in order to do so, then they're going to have the people. And we see that happening now where they're bringing a lot of their, that outsource solution. If they're not bringing the entire solution in, they're bringing in parts of the solution, where it could be even start out as a hybrid model where they are still outsourcing some segments of it, but, some of the ones that are the most important to them and is driving their strategy, they want to go ahead and bring that in-house.
Right. So let's talk about technology now. And again, I think, like I mentioned, 20 years ago, it was very difficult to get budget to implement the TMS. And the reality was, a lot of these CMS solutions were on-premise solutions, just like everything else. You're talking about like $1 million license fee and another $2 million to implement, which is why, really only the largest of the large companies were able to afford, these solutions. Over time, obviously, transportation management systems were one of the first application areas that went the software as a service model, cloud and so forth. So those, the TMSs in general have become just much more affordable and accessible to companies of all sizes today. So that no longer, in my view, it should be a hurdle to, bringing that in-house. But let's talk about, if you are bringing the solution, you are bringing your operations back in-house and you need to either upgrade your existing TMS or you're going to start looking at a TMS for the first time. I mean, what features or capabilities make insourcing, should they look for to make insourcing, both scalable and effective?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think, when you step back, I think it really begins with the architecture of the TMS. To your point earlier, in the old days, there were the clunky systems where you almost had to adapt your processes to the technology. And sometimes it was a very difficult scenario, especially when you're trying to drive adoption for the TMS. I think the first thing you really want to look for is, more of a modular design type of TMS, which really allows for the system itself is built on a collection of independent interchangeable modules. This is really allows you then to communicate, with the different interfaces, allows companies to add or remove or upgrade functionalities, and you can do so in a very nimble way. So what you'll see through them, a modular system, is one where you'll have a lot of flexibility within the processes, within the technology itself. It's scalable. The other piece to that is that it's very customizable, and that's really important if you're looking to adopt, the technology to your business processes. Once you get past the modular design of it, I think, you also need to look at a system that is highly configurable. I think it's really important. A lot of times what I've seen, is that, they adopt a system, yet they aren't using the system to its fullest capabilities, and adoption is really important because you want to be able to go ahead and maximize it as much as possible. So having a system that's very configurable is really important. And then lastly, it's important to have, I always call it table stakes type of function and features today, that has a module in there to help you with your carrier management. There's a module that helps you with your optimization. You have the real-time tracking and visibility. And, also you have some really good, strong reporting and analytics that you can capture from data. I think those are things that are really important within the system as well.
Yeah, you brought up a good point because I think a lot of folks when, they put out an RFP for a TMS, right? They naturally are going to focus on the features and functions, right? In terms of the optimization and visibility and carrier management or procurement, looking at the different life cycle aspect of it. But you brought up a great point, which is about the kind of the architecture piece of it because, as you said, historically with some of the older, more inflexible solutions. You either had to modify your processes to fit the solution, Which in some cases wasn't bad because maybe, a lot of these solutions were built with kind of a best, quote unquote, best practice workflow and systems. But, there were a lot of cases where, you really were different. You really did things a little bit different. Maybe your industry is different than what this TMS was designed originally for and so forth. So then you were put in a position where you had to customize the solution, but the customizations, 20 years ago is very different than customizations today, right? So customizations
Absolutely.
were not only very expensive, they then became kind of this albatross when it came to upgrades, right? Because then if you wanted to upgrade to the next, version of it, a lot of those customizations either were broken or wouldn't work, or you had to rebuild them and so forth. So it was, very complex. So I think looking at the architecture, because if you look today, a lot of the best of breed solutions, particularly companies that have come to the market, such as Princeton TMX in kind of the more recent years, they've come out of, based on, the more modern architectures, right? Web services, microservices, APIs and the like, that provides that kind of configurability, customization of workflows, and be able to do that in a way that's just much more scalable, efficient, and cost effective than it was 20 years ago. So it's not only just the features and functions, and those are important, obviously, at the end of the day, but it's also, understanding how the solution is built. And I guess that's where the kind of some of the IT folks have to come in to kind of understand that and help educate, the logistics folks. But I always encourage logistics folks to also understand, how these solutions actually work, because ultimately we all know, right, Kevin, that you can set up your transportation operate the TMS today to operate under this operating reality, but 6 months from now you make an acquisition or you launch a new product or you're trying to grow a different mode, and now you have to change, and the TMS has to adapt to this new operating reality. So that should be one of the questions, is how, if, asking what if questions, right? If now I am going to introduce rail, which I've never done before, or if I'm going to do more parcel, or if I'm going to do international, how can I use this solution, and how quickly, cost effectively can I adapt this to be effective in a new operating environment, right?
It's so interesting you say that, Adrian. You know, what I've noticed, and I even wrote a white paper several months ago. It was on, I called it the Frankenstein effect. And it's really about, you know, the systems and how fragmented, you know, our systems are. You know, because of the older systems, you know, you may have one system that is doing visibility for you. You may have another one that's managing your fleet. You may have another system that is, you know, that's doing some things around your carrier management, you know. And so what happens is, and you just continue to add all these different pieces onto your, you know, to your TMS platform. And what ends up happening is that you have a suboptimal system because they can't talk to each other, you know. And so when you're really trying to get a really good understanding of the visibility of your entire network, it's very difficult to do so, you know, because you're not pulling all that information from one system. And so I call it the Frankenstein effect, you know, where you just continue to build. And that's something that's real important as well, to make sure that you have a system that can manage all your modes of transportation and do all the core functions within that one particular platform.
Right. Yeah, I love that. The Frank, and then there's a lot of companies out there with Frankenstein in their operations. Of course,
Absolutely.
we can't talk about technology without also talking about AI, right? That's the topic du jour, if you will. So again, how has AI, along with automation and big data and all these things that we've been talking about now for the past few years, how are they improving the insourcing model?
You know, I look at it, it's interesting. We went to Gartner a couple months ago down in Orlando, and every vendor had AI that was plastered on their you know on their booth. And one of the things that I was talking to other shippers, you know, and they were sharing, you know, AI is obviously there's a need for it, but we need to understand what the business case is for artificial intelligence, you know, and how's AI going to help our business and get a return on the investment. And so I think if we look at it from this standpoint, I really kind of break it into some of the key roles that you have within your transportation management, you know, and let's just take three for an example. The first one being the logistics or the transportation manager. You know, at that point, you know, those individuals, a lot of times when you look at the outsource model or even the insource model, if you look at it, I know that we used to have a triangle where you would have your tactical business, you would have your transactional types of processes, and then you'd have your strategic at the top. And so when you look at AI and you look at the insource, a lot of times today, where in the past, you would throw people at some of the tactical, or even the transactional. Today, for that logistics and transportation manager, they can use AI, to help them in that scenario. So I see it, through either route optimization, real-time tracking, doing the containers, looking at those types of visibility. All that can be done, and it can assist, the transportation or logistics manager there. Another role that we see AI really helping in is around the carrier procurement. So again, when you're creating a in the past you had a procurement exercise. Sometimes it could take anywhere from 2 weeks to a few months to go ahead and prepare for that, just capturing all the data, looking at all the lane data, looking at the contracts and things of that nature. Whereas today, through the use of AI, you're able to go ahead and do a lot more evaluation, do a lot more benchmarking to understand where are your challenges at lanes, the challenge in your lanes or service. And then you can go ahead and do that, within a couple days, if not just a couple hours, versus it being, a longer period of time. And then the last role that we see also is probably around that supply chain manager. And this one really looks at it from the broad, bigger picture, the strategic standpoint. They're having more visibility around their network, and looking at what does my workflow automation look like today? How can I go ahead and improve it by using AI tools, versus using people? So those are like just three different examples of roles that are within the insource and outsource model, where we can go ahead and use AI to help to drive ROI for a shipper.
I like that you kind of grounded AI within these specific roles, because I think that's where a lot of, transportation logistics professionals today, I mean, there's so much information out there, hype and buzz and everything else around AI that, they find it difficult to say, okay, well, how does this actually apply to me and apply to my specific role? So I like how, how you did that. I think the other reality is, and I say this all the time, is that, AI has been around for a long time. So it's, AI has already, AI existed in some of the older TMS solutions. They've probably been using AI for the past 2 decades and not realize that they've been, right? So if they have any kind of optimization solution or rule-based decision-making capabilities in their older TMSs, I mean, that's basically still AI. But I think what a lot of folks focus on today is kind of the newer flavors, if you will, the agentic AI, the generative AI, that's where the spotlight is today. But no doubt, I mean, I think being able to kind of look and see how that type of technology can help save time, save resources and the like, I think is key, particularly within those different roles that you outlined. So we kind of touched upon this already a little bit, but maybe there's more to add here. I mean, we all know that successful transportation management depends more than just on technology and AI and everything else. I mean, it also relies on really having the right people, in place. Because at the end of the day, this is still it's still a people business, still a relationship business. Relationship internally with the different functional groups inside the company, as well as relationship with carriers and external parties. So how does in-house talent kind of influence the success of insourcing transportation operations, and how has that relationship evolved over time?
Yeah, that's a great question, Adrian. I think, I'll think back to times when we were selling out, on the outsource solution, and we were in front of our prospects. One of the probably the hardest questions to answer, and one that makes a whole lot of sense, is they were asking, how is it that I can, how can I trust that you're going to be as passionate about our business and about, making the decisions as we are from an internal standpoint? And I think that's really important. I think, when you start to look at, the company culture and you look at, the insource, Obviously, from a hiring perspective, you're going to go ahead and, hire people that match your culture, from that standpoint. And I think there's also, when you look at it, is you give the employees the opportunity to go ahead and move from one position to another, give them some career aspirations to take on more responsibilities. We find that, with the in-source model, those individuals, they're more strategic thinking, because a lot of the tactical and transactional stuff is being taken care of through technology. So I think when you look at it, it's number one, it's the trust factor that you have from internally, versus the external model. You also have it from a culture standpoint. And then when you look at it, I think the other piece of it, which we alluded to a little bit earlier, was around that the resilience and the flexibility of being able to go ahead and make those decisions a lot quicker as well.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up company culture, and I think that's a key point here. I think it's going to be critical for the success if the company culture rewards innovation and proactiveness in transportation and logistics, right? Where the company culture is not about, hey, this isn't something that's not core to our company. This is something that's just going to be a cost center. It's not high on the priority list. I think those are not going to be areas that are going to be successful, and no one's going to want to, join that kind of a company culture team. But if they see that, hey, here's a company that's viewing, like we talked about earlier, that's viewing transportation and logistics as core to meeting our strategic objectives, that it's core, that it's going to be investing in technology, right? Modern technology, so that we can keep pace, with our customer expectations and, the ability to meet our team objectives. I mean, those are going to be the companies, I think, that these young professionals that you were talking about before are going to want to join, right? So the company culture really has to shift from that. It's just a cost center, it's a low priority, to a culture that recognizes the strategic importance of transportation management and logistics, and views it as something that can, drive not only manage costs, which is kind of the table stakes, but also play an active role in customer retention, revenue growth, and market share capture. And I think I think that's a key piece from the company culture standpoint. Kevin, I mean, we can talk for hours here about this topic, but I think we've covered a lot of ground, so far. And I think you provided some great food for thought. So maybe as a way to wrap up, I mean, if a company is looking to insource their transportation management operations, I mean, what are the key steps, to that journey, and any mistakes or pitfalls that they should avoid?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think in looking at that, the key steps in for an in-source transportation management model is really around seven different steps. And the first one is really about assessing your current capabilities. So it's something that to go ahead and conduct a thorough evaluation, of your existing transportation management processes, the technologies and workforce. It's really to go ahead and to do this gap analysis to see where you are today as a starting point. From there, then it's about going and defining what does the target state look like. So really being able to clearly articulate your desired future performance, this really includes service levels, operational capabilities. It's important to be able to define what those are. And then third, you want to go ahead and build an internal logistics team. So this is the team that you want to make sure that you assemble folks that that have the experience in those particular areas that you are going to need for the transportation, carrier management, supply chain operations. Fourth step then is to go ahead and design the process and procedures. And so this is where you're really going to go and look at your current procedures today, your current processes, and really develop a robust standardized process, for your shipping planning, for your carrier selection. This is really important as well, because a lot of times what happens is folks will look at the technology, thinking that technology is going to be the one that's going to cure any process deficiencies. And it's really quite the opposite, is that you need to make sure that you have the right processes in place and then find the technology that will be able to help, to work with that. The other one then is to invest in the right technology. And so again, there's a lot of different platforms out there. I think it's highly encourageable to take a look at, one that's more modular, that allows for you to have real-time visibility analytics all within, and this allows you to have that as much automation as possible. A lot of times in this other one, which is really the sixth, is looking at the carriers, understanding the carriers are really the lifeblood of any transportation management. You need to have carriers. And so it's really about establishing a really good carrier relationship, and being able to go ahead and monitor that also within your TMS. And then lastly, it's around, monitoring, measuring, and always looking to continuously improve. And so that's really probably the seventh step, which is probably but the most important, is like, how am I going to measure the success of our program? Are we driving, ROI? Are we being a differentiator? And so those are the seven steps, when you're looking to possibly do an insource model versus outsource model. If you look at, you had mentioned there, what are some of the mistakes or pitfalls, to avoid? It's really one of them is underestimating the resources that are going to be needed to go ahead and do this evaluation. This is it's a big step for a lot of companies. A lot of them, number one, they may not have the expertise in-house to go ahead and help with that business case or evaluation. So that's one area. And then the other one is really, do you have the skill set in-house, for training? Because that's the other thing, you want to have continuous in training. So I think, if you look at it, those are some of the pitfalls. I alluded to how important having really good, robust processes in place is another area as well.
Well, you definitely provided us a great roadmap there, and a lot of great questions and things for companies to consider as they embark on this journey. So, Kevin, with that, again, thank you very much for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Adrian. I really appreciate it. And I think this is a great forum. Again, if there's anyone has any questions, I'm sure that we'll be able to provide them some information on how they can reach out to us. So thanks again, and have a great day.
Yeah, well, thank you, Kevin. And as Kevin said, if you're watching this episode on demand, either at the Princeton TMX website or on Talking Logistics, and you've got a question or a comment for him, feel free to respond via that medium, and I'm sure he'll be more than happy to respond. So again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.